morning. Happy Thursday. Almost there. Almost there. I'm Melissa Carter, your host here for She Persisted. Thank you so much for being here today. So I have an observation to make. A kind way of saying I have a complaint. So I was meeting somebody for lunch. I had some time to kill. I had run a few errands and realized that I was going to be early. So there was a bookstore near the restaurant where I was going to meet my friend. Bookstores are, I love to go into a bookstore just to hang out. And in this particular bookstore, there is a Starbucks. Now, I do not drink Starbucks coffee. I am a Dunkin' Donuts girl. And then if Dunkin' Donuts is not available, then I will go to McDonald's. But I got to tell you, I am one of the few, I can't stand Starbucks coffee, but I'll drink their tea. I like tea. So, you know, we've talked about this. I have kind of quit coffee. Every so often I'll drink it if it's really cold or I'm having a, you know, I'm really tired during the day. But tea, you know, when, and they've got a ginger tea. So I got the ginger tea and I had probably, I guess I got there a little afternoon. The lunch appointment was not till 1. So I had a good 45 minutes to walk around the store, peruse the books and the magazines, and then I would go meet my friends. So the idea was that I went to Starbucks first. I ordered my ginger tea, small, tall, whatever. That's exactly how I said it to her. Small, tall, whatever you call it. Got my cup and walked around the bookstore. Now, I noticed as I was walking around the bookstore, even though the tea cup had one of those cardboard, you know, holders on it to, I guess, keep be able to allow you to carry it and it not be so hot, it was still almost too hot for me to carry. Like, I had to switch hands as I was going around, realizing that my fingers were very hot. There was no way I was about to take a sip and scald the entire inside of my mouth, because you've done that. I mean, once you take that first sip and it's too hot, your tongue is like ruined for the day. And then later on that night, you're eating dinner and you're wondering, why in the world is my tongue hurt? And you realize, oh yeah, it's because that that hot soup or that coffee or that tea I had earlier. So I wasn't going to do that. I walked around, looked at books, was in several sections, went to the kids' books, went to the magazines, looking around, looking at the discount, you know, 75% off a bunch of stuff, and looking around. Still, did not take one sip of my tea. So it was getting time for me to get to the car, go across the street, and get to the restaurant. And if you're wondering why I didn't walk, it's because it's cold. So I drove. And I got there and I laughed and I thought, well, I'm just going to put this in the cup holder and I'm going to see if it's still warm enough to drink when I get out of lunch. So I bought the tea and almost an hour before my lunch, and I placed it in the placeholder in the car before lunch, having not had a sip. I went into lunch. I had lunch with my friend. We were there for an hour and 45 minutes. I started lunch at 1 o'clock. I did not get back to the car until 2:45. I got in the car and I picked up my tea. And sure enough, it was just about perfect. It was ready to drink. That water at Starbucks was so fucking hot that it lasted 2 full hours before I was able to drink my tea on the way home. And my thought was, I got the tea to be able to walk around the bookstore and sip on while I'm shopping. I do not, you know, if I wanted to get an order and plan ahead for wanting tea at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and having to go to you at noon in order to get it done, that's not what I'm trying to do. I'm not trying to pre-plan my afternoon tea at lunchtime. I wanted my tea drinkable in the moment. It's so hard to get a hot drink prepared to your liking at that exact moment. I will tell you, at the restaurant that I went to, they had butternut squash soup. It's that time of year. And that was a perfect temperature when I got it. That's the one time that I can imagine in a restaurant, they have the temperature just so that you can eat it in the time that you're sitting there eating the soup. But when I went to Starbucks, I had to give them 2 hour notice for my tea to drink. I just thought that was ridiculous. I know we have these, you know, lawsuits that we've made fun of in the past for hot drinks. And I'm sure that restaurants are thinking, well, if you buy it and you take it somewhere that you want it to stay warm for the trip, I guess. Maybe that's the philosophy. But 3 hours? 3 hours. I mean, this tea... you would have thought I had it in... What are those things that people just love? Those tumblers... God, I had a colleague that was obsessed with those things. You know, those, I can't think of it now, but not Keurig, that's the coffee maker. What is that thing? Anyway, you're probably screaming at me as you're thinking of it, but it's, you know, it's supposed to keep your drinks hot and they're in cold for long periods of time. I didn't like that thing either. I got one of those as a gift. Oh, that's going to drive me nuts. What in the hell is that called? I'm going to have to look it up as I'm talking. So I got one of those metal tumbler things, and it I'd got it at work because my friend was so obsessed with what the hell is this called? Driving me nuts. Anyway, there's all kinds of metal tumblers out there, but this is one that costs like $200. That's ridiculous. The price is ridiculous. Anyway, you know what I'm talking about. I got one of those too, because he loved it at work, and I got it as a gift, so I took it to work to show him I had one too, and I hated it because I would pour my coffee at home and I would go through a 4-hour show and barely could touch my coffee till toward the end of the show. I want to be able to sip now. I want it now. I mean, I'm in the now generation that we're living in, and I want my, if I order something, if I'm got a hankering for some tea or some hot chocolate or some coffee, I would like to drink it now, please. May I? I don't understand. I couldn't believe a 3-hour tea. So yes, next time when I go to Starbucks, I'm going to ask them for their 3-hour tea and just plan, you know, schedule when I get to take a sip on that thing. But another cool thing I got to do before that lunch. So I've mentioned before, I mean, every day on the show, if you listen to, you know, the promos in between the segments, hint, hint, there, I always talk about the Rose Bowl Parade and the fact that I'm in the Rose Bowl Parade on January 1st. It's an incredible honor. I still can't believe it. It took experiences like the one I'm about to tell you about to prove to me that it was actually happening, because I have always watched the Rose Bowl Parade, and it was a tradition with me and Millie Pete. We would watch it on HGTV, and I just thought that the Rose Bowl Parade is so magical because it's just works of art, and the time spent putting those things together is just amazing. I knew someone who was a transplant recipient that had been on the Donate Life Float. So every year in the Rose Bowl Parade, there is a Donate Life Float, and it is sponsored by several organizations, but the riders on it, the recipients that ride the float, are sponsored by usually hospitals or, you know, other companies that are involved in transplants. And it highlights, look, it works. Transplantation works. But the real stars of that float are the donors who lost their lives and donated organs, and their families donated organs during, you know, a terrible loss. And they are always depicted on the float in the flowers, in the full, you know, in the living, you know, things, the living plants that are on these floats. And they have pictograms that are made of flowers and plants that are on the float. So they are the stars of the float. We recipients are just, you know, we're ornaments. We're there to show what their sacrifice has done. So I'm honored to be one of those recipients. Well, I had a friend who was a recipient and was on that float at one time. It was through her that I was able to get on this float. And Piedmont Healthcare in Atlanta is my sponsor for the float. They asked me to come by for a photo shoot that they invited all the transplant unit, the nurses, the techs, the administrative officials, the doctors to come in and do a photo shoot where Piedmont was signing a vial. So not like a blood vial, but you know when you buy roses or buy flowers and they usually put like that water vial at the bottom of the stem, so it can keep it alive and not wilted before you can time to get it home. not as severe as Starbucks. I mean, the water is cold for the flower. It is, you know, water that they put on the flower so you can get it home. Those little vials, you know, where the water is at the bottom. There was an empty vial that Piedmont was signing, had a Rose Bowl sticker on it, and they were signing to put on the float. So hospitals across the U.S. are doing the same thing that Piedmont just did. They're, you know, if they have a renowned transplant unit, which many hospitals across the country do, then they all participate and they sign a vial, and those vials are used on the float to help some of those, you know, flowers and the things they use to stay fresh. Piedmont will have that on the float, you know, and I'll be on the float. And so I went to be part of that photo shoot, and we were in a conference room, and the conference room almost was too small because the amount of people that showed up for the photo shoot was really cool. And it was some people that I had seen before and met before. The doctor that signed the vial was actually a doctor that had done a couple surgeries on me in my time. So we caught up a little bit and he didn't do my transplant, but leading up to a transplant, you have to have surgeries to get your veins ready for dialysis. And I've shared that before. His name is Dr. Batty, and he was my vascular surgeon. When you get sick, you also learn all these technical terms, and vascular surgeon, the one that deals with, you know, your veins and your blood vessels. We caught up. how you doing? I'm good. How you doing? Oh, yeah, yeah, I got your scars right here. There they are. You want to see them? And so it was really fun. But it was really magical to see everybody gathered together and understanding that, you know, they've dedicated their lives to helping people through transplantation. So this is a group of people who not only have saved lives like mine, but they're the ones that are there for the families of the loved ones who are lost. And if you are a donor family, as we call them, then you're the biggest heroes on the planet, because it takes a lot of love and strength in the time of such tragedy to turn your loved one over to the hospital and say, yes, you can use their heart and their liver and their lungs and their kidney and their eyes and their ligaments for whoever needs them. It's a choice that they get to make. And it's so easy not to make that choice. It's so easy to fuss at the doctors and call them monsters for even asking the question, and that they don't. They let their loved ones live on through other people. So it's pretty special. And these are pretty special people. So it's fun to be with them. And that was before the Starbucks. I went to Starbucks after that. You know, so it's a balance of life. Coming up next, I want to share with you something I found so fascinating. Now, I am not proficient at classical music. I don't know if you are. I wouldn't even call myself a fan. I'm not turned off by it, but I am aware of it. But I read an article about how history has pretty much not been fair to women when it comes to classical music. One of the purposes of She Persisted, and for us as women, as we move forward and gain more leverage in this world, is to understand that our history has also been incorrect, and we need to correct some of that. So we're going to do that. Coming up next here on She Persisted on the Progressive Voices Network, I'm Melissa Carter.
Now, the top of the hour on the Progressive Voices channel on TuneIn presents the Green News Report.
The world is moving on, and so is the United States.
At UN climate talks in Bonn, Germany, the U.S. is a bit schizophrenic. New report shows Paris Agreement targets are not nearly enough. Senate approves fossil fuel lobbyist for top EPA air pollution position. Plus, Puerto Rico's governor estimates damages after Hurricane Maria are $95 billion.
All of those damages and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
So what will make strong hurricanes more and more frequent? According to our government, the answer is none of your f***ing business. Stop asking so many questions.
Agreed. If you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen. Well, after a main power line went out in Puerto Rico late last week, dropping the island from 40% power capacity back down to 18%, that has now been fixed. And now, 7 weeks after Hurricane Maria made landfall, still 50% of the island is without power.
Yes, the recovery is going extremely slowly, and Puerto Rican Governor Ricardo Rossello on Monday estimated that rebuilding the island after two back-to-back hurricanes, both Irma and Maria, will cost $95 billion. That's an amount roughly equal to the island's entire annual gross domestic product. Rossello asked Congress to cover the costs of the reconstruction price tag as, quote, an important step to demonstrate that the federal government will treat Puerto Ricans like any other American citizens.
Oh, sure. The federal government giving $95 billion to Puerto Rico. Good luck with that, Puerto Rico.
Meanwhile, in Texas, which is now rebuilding from Hurricane Harvey, a new MIT study calculates that climate change made Hurricane Harvey about 6 times more likely, and that the state's annual risk of similar extreme rainfall events in any given year is now 18% higher thanks to global warming.
Thanks, global warming.
Meanwhile, in the U.S. Senate, the majority Republicans voted strictly along party lines to confirm fossil fuel industry lawyer and lobbyist William Wareham for the number 2 spot at the EPA. Wareham has spent his...
Let me just break in there. That's the fossil fuel lobbyist who now is the number 2 guy at the Environmental Protection Agency.
That's right.
Got it.
Wareham has spent his career suing the EPA to roll back clean air standards that restrict mercury, silica, lead, and smog.
And we call that regulatory capture, do we not?
Yes, we do.
Well done, fossil fuel industry.
At the United Nations climate talks, now underway in Bonn, Germany, international negotiators are hammering out the mechanisms for 195 nations to reduce their emissions under the landmark Paris Climate Agreement. But a new report from the United United Nations Environment Program calculates that the current national commitments under that agreement are only about one-third of the reductions needed to avoid shooting past the agreed-upon target of no more than 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial temperatures. However, the report also concludes that accelerating the transition to solar and wind energy, replanting forests, and increasing the energy efficiency of our cars and buildings can help close that gap.
That sounds like a great idea. I suspect everyone in the world except the U.S. will be interested.
Well, last week, the United States became the only nation on the planet not included in that agreement. That's thanks to President Trump's intention to withdraw from the Paris Agreement in 2020. But a Trump administration delegation is attending the Bonn climate talks anyway.
And I hope they are being met with boos and hisses.
Yeah, pretty much. On Monday, they hosted an event to promote so-called U.S. clean coal and nuclear energy technology to developing countries as a way to cut their emissions. And, of course, they were interrupted by a climate action youth protest.
So you claim to be an American, but we see right through your greed. It's killing all across the world for that coal mining, and we proudly stand up.
And a shadow delegation is also representing the U.S. in Bonn, a coalition of states, cities, and businesses seeking to highlight positive U.S. climate efforts and strike their own deals on the subnational level.
Are they better singers?
I hope so. But their schizophrenic parallel U.S. presence is creating some confusion for other countries, according to the New York Times, who aren't quite sure who to trust. Former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, who is leading the state action coalition, on Monday criticized the Trump administration and noted that, thanks to the states, the U.S. is already halfway to meeting the Obama administration's pledge to cut U.S. emissions.
It is important for the world to know the American government may have pulled out of the Paris Agreement, but the American people are committed to its goals, and there is nothing Washington can do to stop us.
Well, that's good to hear, but Washington is going to keep trying to roll the clock backwards. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide, please, on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Please help Progressive Voices support the Green News Report by stopping by bradblog.com/donate.
Whether you're listening to me, Mark Levine, each Monday and Wednesday,
or me, Leslie Marshall, each Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday,
you can hear us 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Voices Network.
Here's a sample of what you'll hear. Congressman Ted Lieu, a Democrat from California, is a member of the House Foreign Affairs and House Judiciary Committees. You are one of the lawmakers, along with other veterans, who are urging our own president to halt his heated words with regard to North Korea. Tell us about this, and please tell us why, sir.
We ask the president to stop making provocative statements against North Korea. The reason I did that is because it's very clear we have no good military options against North Korea. When I served on active duty, I was at Anderson Air Force Base in Guam. I was under U.S. Pacific Air Forces. We always did a series of different military exercises, much of it directed against North Korea. And the problem is we can't contain escalation. We don't know how the North Korean regime would react to military force. And if they go berserk and go crazy, a lot of people are going to die, including hundreds of thousands of Americans.
There was a Pentagon report on what a war with that isolated nation would entail. In addition to what you've just said, is there anything else that the Pentagon report found that people listening should be aware of?
Representative Ruben Gallego and I wrote a letter to the Pentagon asking them to explain to the American public what a war would look like. And they gave us a letter that was very blunt. I think their Joint Chiefs were actually trying to send a message. So first thing they said is we would need a ground invasion. That means we can't just launch 59 cruise missiles like we did in Syria and be done with the issue. This would be a long, protracted, bloody war with a lot of ground forces going into North Korea. And we have so little intelligence on the regime that we don't know where all their nuclear weapons are, nor where they are all located. And they also hide them. So we're going to have to try to find those nuclear weapons and secure them or destroy them. And if our ground forces can't do that before they can retaliate, then we're in a lot of trouble because they can detonate a nuclear weapon and kill a lot of Americans and South Koreans.
Yeah, and I want to talk about that briefly, Congressman. We're over here. The people of South Korea are the closest target. And in a sense, anything that is said by this president or any action that we have with North Korea affect one of our strongest allies, especially in that region, South Korea, and the South Korean people themselves.
The president of South Korea, President Moon, has repeatedly stated that there will be no military force without the pre-approval of South Korea. So if the U.S. tries to conduct military operations in North Korea and the South Koreans are not with us, that just makes it 10 times harder. And keep in mind, in the First Korean War, China and Russia supported North Korea. So if they were to do that again in a Second Korean War, then there's no reason to believe that the U.S. can even win that war.
There are a lot of Americans who don't know as much about North Korea, but arguably the people there are brainwashed, and I believe that this madman who leads North Korea would send his peoples to slaughter simply to win a point. And that scares me also for the people of North Korea, because they don't really understand the truth of the world that they're living in and the world that surrounds them outside of those borders.
That is correct. The North Korean regime has done a very good job of brainwashing much of their population. But I have to tell you, their foreign policy experts and intelligence experts, they assess the North Korean leader is not suicidal, that he is rational in the sense that he'll do what he can to preserve his regime, which means that he's unlikely to, in fact, launch a nuclear weapon at the United States, because he knows if he does that, he'll be annihilated. The question is, can we deter him? Can we deter him the same way we would deter China or Russia, which has nuclear weapons? And a lot of how you view North Korea depends on your answer to that question.
Again, that's Mark Levine every Monday and Wednesday.
And Leslie Marshall each Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday.
3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Voices Network.
Whether you are in or out of town on New Year's Day, I invite you to simply watch the Rose Bowl Parade on January 1st. Why? Because I have the honor as a kidney transplant recipient of riding on the Donate Life Float thanks to my sponsor, Atlantis Piedmont Healthcare. What a cool experience to be in the Rose Bowl Parade. And you can find out more, what the float looks like, and even become an organ donor at DonateLifeFloat.org. That's DonateLifeFloat.org. Welcome back to She Persisted. I am your host, Melissa Carter. I think that history is the most important subject that is taught in school, because I think that to have a good sense of where we are today as a society, especially, and sometimes where you are as an individual, can only be seen from looking at the perspective or the environment of history. It's almost like running a marathon and having to look back every now and again to see how far you've run, just to make sure that you realize that even though the road seems long in front of you, the road behind you may be longer. And the reason I say that is we as women have felt somewhat defeated and inspired here recently with everything that's gone on. But I think that we have to understand how far we have come as a gender, especially when it comes to things we want to do within our lives, whether it's a hobby or a profession. No longer do we have to choose between, say, our grandmothers to be a nurse or a teacher or just a homemaker. I mean, those were pretty much the three professions that you had to choose from in a certain age group. Well, before that, you couldn't even choose the nurse and the teacher profession. You had to be a wife and a mother, and that was it, regardless of what you might have been interested in. And such was back in the 18th and 19th centuries, in the time when classical music was really at its heyday. Regardless of how you feel about classical music, everybody knows Beethoven and Bach, but did you realize that there were female composers back in the day? Now, a lot of those female composers weren't allowed to get their music out there. So there was so much obviously lost because nobody took the time to listen or even publish the work of these women. But common sense tells you that just because you're told that you have to be a housewife doesn't mean that that's what every single woman wanted to do, and they were doing their own thing out of their home. I also think when it comes to history as the most important subject, that it should always be revised to include things it may have originally left out. And when I say history, of course, history is as good as the person who writes it. And a lot of times, white men of English descent are the ones, especially in American history, that prevail with their stories. But obviously, they are not the only ones that did anything or accomplished anything or contributed to our society. So one of the revisions of classical music history comes to Mendelssohn. Now, you've heard of Mendelssohn, very famous composer, Felix Mendelssohn. But did you know that he had a sister? And his sister's name was Fanny Hensel. Felix and Fanny grew up in the same home. They both showed incredible talent early for music and composition, and some even say that Fanny's talent sometimes overshadowed her brother Felix. But their father only encouraged Felix to pursue music as a profession, while he described his daughter's talent as quote-unquote ornament. Now, Felix disagreed and was very supportive of his sister, and he even cautiously published some of her compositions under his name, which is the only way that music was going to get published at the time. So here's an example of one of Fanny's compositions, and it's called Overture. An American named Amy Beach was a little more fortunate. She was the first woman in America to achieve success in the classical music world. Now, she apparently was really gifted as a young woman. People saw this talent that she had, but she still wasn't encouraged to study. What's interesting about her, the feeling at the time was that women who were gifted should not be trained because the training might squash that gift. And I think in essence that means that women were still weak, maybe even weak in the mind. And if you pushed them too hard or tried to, you know, encourage that gift or develop that gift, then the gift will go away. So Amy was not trained in music, but she trained herself to compose. And she wrote something called the Gaelic Symphony, and it actually premiered in 1896 at the Boston Symphony Orchestra. So she is the first American woman to have a symphony composed and published. And here is her piece, Gaelic Symphony. So why do we know this now? Why am I talking about this morning? What goes to show that one person can make a difference, and her name is Joanne Folletta. And Joanne is the music director for the Virginia Symphony Orchestra. And the longtime conductor decided to spend her career, or so she thought, helping female musicians perform in the orchestra, kind of bolster women in music. But what she didn't realize until she graduated from Juilliard It was that women composed this music as well. She says that she didn't even question what she was being taught at Juilliard, and then realized upon leaving college that there were women in music that nobody knew about that she needed to dig up and have their music performed. And so tonight in Virginia, she's doing a performance called Women in Music, and she is going to highlight two of the pieces that I just told you, plus some others, like Alma Mahler. Now, if that name Mahler sounds familiar, it's because Alma was married to Gustav Mahler, who was a famous composer. Gustav was 19 years older than Alma. Now, Alma, in her own right, was an author, an editor, and a composer, but Gustav told her that she had to give up her music as the condition of their marriage. So instead of helping her and having that in common with her, again, back in the day, Gustav's like, no, I'm the only composer in this house. Thank you to Joanne Folletta for, even though you didn't realize this was going to be part of your life's work to uncover some of these women's beautiful pieces, the fact that once you realized a mistake had been made, or once you realized that these women needed their notes to be heard. I was going to say words to be heard, but it's notes to be heard. You continued with it. You know, one of the things that she did, she used to work in San Francisco as a conductor. And with Fanny Hensel, remember, that's Mendelssohn's sister, her music was locked up in a library in Berlin. And it took someone going over to Berlin to bring it back to San Francisco, where Folletta, you know, led an orchestra so they could play it for the very first time. So it was a San Francisco orchestra that was led by Joanne Folletta that played Fanny Hensel's music for the very first time after centuries. I mean, so I think that's just an incredible, incredible feat that she did, and a passion that she has for this. And thank you, Joanne, for doing that and saving these women. Could you imagine Fanny somewhere as she's upset over the fact her father won't let her do what she wants to do as a passion, and to realize that, and to know in the 20th century that she was going to be able to have her music played for the public and it be celebrated? Just fantastic. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to post the article that reported on this. The Virginian Pilot did a piece about the Women in Music concert. And so I'm going to post that on our website, shepersistedshow.com. And there it has the link to some of the music that they perform. We'll be back with more She Persisted coming up here on the Progressive Voices Network. I'm Alyssa Carter.
You're listening to the Progressive Voices Network, and here's a clip from Tara Buster with comedian Tara Devlin from RDTDaily.com.
How low can they go? As far as Roy Moore is concerned, what does it matter if he molested children? They have bigger fish to fry. They need to destroy democracy. That's their ultimate goal. You know, and when a Republican says, we're just protecting children, that's when our red flags need to go up. Because what are they protecting them from? They're protecting them from having two loving parents that happen to be gay. But they're not protecting them from needlessly dying without health care. They're not protecting them from ignorance by funding education. They're not protecting them from getting gunned down when their parents take them to church. They're not really protecting children. And when Roy Moore says, well, why now? Why are they coming out now? That was 40 years ago. I have to say, you know, it's never really a good time for a pedophile when a victim comes forward to report them. We really usually don't consider whether it fits into the perpetrator's schedule. But that's today's Republican Party, GOP, pedophiles, Putin, and plutocracy. All for plutocracy.
This is Tara Devlin from RDTDaily.com. That was a clip from my show, Tara Buster. Join us for the live recording every Saturday at 6 p.m. Eastern at FYINation.com, or catch the replays starting Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern on Progressive Voices, or anytime on demand on the Progressive Voices app. Support the Progressive Voices Network and tell your friends. Remember, we stick together, we win.
This is the Top of the Hour from the Progressive Voices channel on TuneIn. Instead of commercials, you've got progressive news and interviews right here at the Top of the Hour.
Hello, Progressive Voices TuneIn listeners. I'm Casey Hobbs.
And I'm Shane Mason, and we're the hosts of Nurse Talk Radio.
Here's what we're talking about this week.
Well, that music can only mean one thing. It's time for Healthcare in America with Donna Smith. Donna, welcome. Why, thank you. It's great to be on Nurse Talk again.
So, Donna, what's going on specific to health care in this horrible tax proposal?
Oh, my gosh. You know, you said it so well when you said, you know, just when you thought they were going to give up on dismantling health care, through the ACA at least, they slipped something in the tax bill. And this time we have a couple of things, at least on the House side, that we don't know if they will survive through the Senate process and then on to Trump. But in their dreams, they would like to. One of the things is take away the medical deduction that so many people who incur huge medical expenses have been able to use for many, many years so that they can at least offset some of the expense that they've had through the year. If that goes away, that really is going to hurt a lot of, and mostly middle-income people, of course, contrary to what they'd like us to believe, that this is such a great deal for the middle class. You know, for instance, my husband and I, if we lose that medical expense deduction, it's a huge problem.
And is anybody even hearing about that?
I think they've spoken about it a couple of times on some of the news programs and so forth, but it turns out the Republicans at this point, they almost are just immune to having any real accountability for what's going on because the next crisis of the moment comes along and it seems like folks get distracted, and it would be hard to see that as coincidental.
Well, I really haven't heard anything about this tax bill that does make it better for the middle class. And I keep hearing that. But everything I hear factually says no, it would not be.
Well, exactly. And the other thing in health care that's very concerning is they've talked about, and the CBO has now scored this, they've talked about they're going after the subsidies again that through the Affordable Care Act that low-income people use to help pay their premiums, which has made it affordable for so many more people to get insurance than have ever had insurance before in this country. And so they've asked the CBO to score, which they did. How much would it save in the federal budget if we were to do away with the subsidies for premiums under the Affordable Care Act? And it's been determined that would save many billions of dollars. But what was not said in the stories that were released about that is what does that equate to and how many people actually no longer having insurance coverage because they won't be able to afford a premium that doesn't have any subsidy attached to it. So this is just a really bad, you know, it's a really bad way to carry out health policy is to do it through a tax bill. It seems dishonest. It seems destined to be something that people will be surprised by, precisely because of what you just said, Patty, that people are being told this is such a great deal for the middle class, while at the same time the real provisions of the bill have some very, very bad things in it.
Well, they couldn't get the health care bill passed, so instead they're going to try to do some of that through this new tax bill. So what are the Democrats doing to push back?
Well, of course, they're resisting this particular bill. They also put forward their own budget plan, the people's budget. At least the Congressional Progressive Caucus has done that. And certainly the Republicans rejected that out of hand and really, really did not want that at all. So they're not likely to be successful with that. But there's also so many other measures that we can tell folks about. We've talked about the Inclusive Prosperity Act before on this show, the Robin Hood tax, and that would be such a wonderful way for this government to raise revenue without hurting anyone and raising revenue instead of adding to the deficit, which, by the way, the Republican tax plan adds more than $1 trillion to the federal deficit. So this isn't at all about cutting the federal deficit and being good stewards of the country's money. This is more about giving tax breaks to the wealthy and corporations, and again, but telling the middle class that, gosh, that good things are going to trickle down to you eventually. And we saw how that worked in the past. So the Dems are being as loud and as resistant as they can be. And, you know, we were pretty successful in resisting the Republicans on the health care measure. So it's a matter of educating the public more and more, and like we're doing today, and saying, watch for this tax bill. Don't be fooled. Get as busy about calling your representatives and your senators as you were about the health care bill, and let them know how offensive that is to all of us. It's not the way we need to go.
Check out our show at nursetalksite.com and listen every Saturday and Sunday right here on Progressive Voices.
You've been listening to Top of the Hour on the Progressive Voices channel on TuneIn. Commercial-free interviews and exclusive progressive news and information at the top of the hour.
Ever really think about what ideas can do? Well, then you realize the size of the thinker does not determine or even limit the size of the idea. Well, that's what my children's book is all about. It's called Whale of an Idea. And if you need a gift for a baby shower or a birthday, I would love for you to consider it. Whale of an Idea, available now online at Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Welcome back to She Persisted. I'm your host, Melissa Carter. We talked earlier about LEGO releasing the Women of NASA series. That was released, I believe, on November 1st. So earlier this month, there are a set of Women of NASA figurines that LEGO has put out. I will let you know, I'm a 40-something-year-old woman, and I've told my brother that that is all I want for Christmas. I didn't ask for my son. That's mama's gift. But that's really cool that women are being depicted in more serious roles than your regular Barbie doll. Now, speaking of Barbie, though, Barbie is doing something new because Mattel is about to put out its first Barbie that wears a hijab. Okay, it's based on Olympic fencer Ibtihaj Muhammad, who was the first U.S. athlete to compete in the Olympics while wearing a hijab. You remember her. She was last year in Rio, and she was a badass. This is her seeing the doll unveiled and talking about her experience with Barbies when she was a girl.
You have your little jacket.
Love it.
Pants.
Is this my little hijab that's flying high in the wind?
Yes.
Wait, is this your first Barbie with a hijab? That is amazing.
Oh my goodness, so cute.
When I heard that there had never been a Muslim woman on the U.S. team who wore the hijab, that is when I made this conscious decision to go for 2016. And other minorities could see that, you know, with hard work and perseverance, anything's possible.
I would even sew little tiny hijabs on my Barbie dolls.
Oh.
I'm serious, yes. Sometimes made of tissue, but they did have hijabs.
I don't know what was going on with all that music. In the background, I was thinking every time I make a big statement, I want somebody to have, you know, just some kind of dance music going on in the background. It is very cool. And the fact that she had to make hijabs for her dolls when she was little. I'm trying to think of, I mean, I grew up in a white neighborhood in a white town with a white Barbie. I mean, it was all white. I remember the big diversity within my Barbie doll collection was my sister's Barbie dolls were handed down to me. And then I was raised around the time of Malibu Barbie. So Malibu Barbie and Ken. And Malibu Ken looked a lot different than my sister's Ken, who looked very 1950s haircut and, you know, nothing going on. And Malibu Ken, had the tan lines. So we had the tan lines. But Skipper was the diversity. I mean, it wasn't race. It was the flat-chested one. So Skipper was the one that had not developed yet. And, you know, for girls around that age who were about to get their boobs, that's all I could concentrate on is there's Barbie and there's Skipper. Poor Skipper. Not realizing I would be more like Skipper than Barbie as I grew older. And then two of my best friends growing up were part of fraternal twins. So the brothers had the G.I. Joes. And I can't remember who else they had besides G.I. Joe. They didn't have very many superheroes. I noticed that my friends' brothers were more military than they were superheroes. So it was mostly army men and things like that that came over to visit Barbie. And that Barbie would rather be with G.I. Joe than she wanted to be with Cam. Just saying. In Tennessee. In Tennessee, camo rules. Okay. the new Barbie that was wearing a hijab. I don't even know if she she is called Ibtihaj after the fencer or if she's called Barbie. I don't know, but the doll will be available sometime next year. So the sad thing is that the doll will not be available for this Christmas, but will be available next year for any child who should have this doll, which is every child. I don't think you need to be Muslim to have this doll in your collection. That's kind of my point about, you know, voting with your doll. Go ahead and buy the doll for your daughter, regardless of your daughter's religion, because it's about what the child sees in their home will be how they see the world, you know. And if you learn to treat everybody with respect in your home, then you will treat everybody with respect in the world. I think everybody should buy this doll. Coming up next is my can of crazy, and it goes along the theme of treating people with respect, because I don't think this guy was treated with much respect by the people around him. I'm going to explain. Coming up in my can of crazy next on the Progressive Voices Network, I'm Melissa Carter.
Hello, Progressive Voices tune-in listeners. I'm Casey Hobbs.
And I'm Shane Mason, and we're the hosts of Nurse Talk Radio.
Here's what we're talking about this week. What's going on specific to healthcare in this horrible tax proposal?
Oh, my gosh. You know, you said it so well when you said, you know, just when you thought they were going to give up on dismantling healthcare, through the ACA at least, they slipped something in the tax bill. And this time we have a couple of things, at least on the House side, that we don't know if they will survive through the Senate process and then on to Trump. But one of the things is take away the medical deduction that so many people who incur huge medical expenses have been able to use for many, many years so that they can at least offset some of the expense that they've had through the year. If that goes away, that really is going to hurt a lot of, and mostly middle-income people, of course, contrary to what they'd like us to believe, that this is such a great deal for the middle class. You know, for instance, my husband and I, if we lose that medical expense deduction, it's a huge problem. And the other thing in healthcare that's very concerning is they've talked about, and the CBO has now scored this, they've talked about they're going after the subsidies again, that through the Affordable Care Act that low-income people use to help pay their premiums. So this is just a really bad way to carry out health policy, to do it through a tax bill. It seems dishonest. It seems destined to be something that people will be surprised by. People are being told this is such a great deal for the middle class, while at the same time, the real provisions of the bill have some very bad things in it.
Check out our show at nursetalksite.com and listen every Saturday and Sunday right here on Progressive Voices.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1982. That Tuesday, the National Football League players ended their 57-day strike. The league scrambled to get the new season going, scheduling games for that very next Sunday. The shortened 9-game season included 2 games played before the walkout, and the rest after the strike ended. The biggest issue that led to the strike was compensation and benefits. The NFL had seen a surge in television revenue with a new 5-year contract worth $2.1 billion. The players asked for 55% of the league's growing profits. The Players Association also wanted a minimum pay scale based on years of service and improvements in health care and retirement benefits. The owners flatly refused. On September 20th, the Green Bay Packers beat the New York Giants in a Monday night football game. The next day, the New York Daily News reported, quote, "For the first time in its 63-year history, labor troubles will throw the NFL for a loss." By a unanimous vote of its executive committee, the league's Players Association yesterday voted to call a strike. The article continued by writing, quote, "The players stressed that they had been forced to call the strike in frustration over what they termed management's twin failures to take them seriously and to bargain in good faith." Sports Illustrated summed up fan sentiments about the strike with a cover headline reading, What? Over the image of a deflated football. Finally, the two sides came to an agreement. The players won raises, bonuses based on years in the league, and severance packages for retiring players. But the gains were far below the union's goals. Bitterness lingered, and 5 years later, the players would be on strike once again. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a Diversified Media Enterprises production. I'm Doug Cunningham. The D.C. Nurses Association says despite winning an arbitration award for $4.1 million in unpaid raises for nurses going back to 2013, the union has been informed that the District of Columbia will not certify the money to pay the nurses. The nurses work at United Medical Center, a public health facility of Washington, D.C. Walla Blagay is the staff attorney for the D.C. Nurses Association. She says nurses are dealing with mismanagement that has contributed to unsafe nurse-patient ratios, in addition to not being paid the wages owed.
Our nurses are working in a very unsafe environment. Many of the nurses feel overwhelmed with high nurse-patient ratios, where they're looking at quite a bit of patients with chronic conditions, and they feel overwhelmed. They don't feel this supported. This management that just lost the contract, we're not supportive of nurses. So these nurses are reaching their end. We're going to have to make some moves.
Blagay said before Veritas lost its management contract at United Medical Center, there were many issues, but the D.C. City Council was still going to move forward paying a management contract before paying the $4.1 million owed to the nurses. That contract was since denied, but Blagay says it's indicative of what labor is facing across the board in America.
This is not new to labor. We're seeing more and more of this where management companies, you see here there's a priority where it's like, okay, you have these nurses working in a very unsafe environment. You're not paying attention to them. You don't even listen to their concerns. And now you're not going to pay them, but yet you're going to give a contract raise to a management company who's shown to be ineffective. This is about priorities here and not really about the lack of certification of funds.
Public Citizen says Trump's nomination of Big Pharma executive Alex Azar as the next Secretary of Health and Human Services shows Trump isn't serious about reining in high prescription drug prices. Trump claims this guy, Azar, would be a star who will lower prescription drug prices. But Azar was president of Eli Lilly USA. Public Citizen says under Azar's watch, 6 million diabetic Americans had their insulin prices more than tripled by Eli Lilly. Public Citizen says that the price of Humalog went up 345%, and now Trump wants the guy who presided over that huge price spike for a life-saving medicine to be in charge of U.S. Health and Human Services. Public Citizen says if Azar is confirmed, then, quote, Big Pharma's coup d'etat in the healthcare sphere will be virtually complete, end quote. WIN is America's multimedia news voice for workers. Support WIN's worker news mission at workersindependentnews.com. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit workersindependentnews.com.
If you've ever been to one of the cities graced with a Trump hotel, casino, resort, etc., you know that the Donald splashes his name in giant, gaudy letters across every structure he owns, preferably in gold. Now, he's taken ownership of a massive new structure, and he might not want his name on this one. It's Trump's towering redo of America's tax law, and it's truly golden. For the super rich, that is. Revealing in hard numbers whom his presidency really serves. Not just the 1%, but the 1/10 of 1%ers who are multimillionaires, like, guess who? Him. First and foremost, the Trump tax plan slashes the payments that giant corporations make to support our nation. He claims that this will let corporate elites raise the wages of workers and create jobs, winking at the fact that, of course, the elites will pocket every dime of his tax giveaways. And shh, don't mention a little secret gotcha. A third of his corporate benefits go to foreign owners of American corporations. Meanwhile, Trump's luxurious new tax structure eliminates many benefits for middle-class families, such as tax deductions for medical expenses, college tuition, and interest paid on student loans. He wants modest-income families to pay more so he can eliminate current taxes on his own uber-rich family, including killing the alternative income tax paid by the rich and the estate tax, which applies only to the immense fortunes of a handful of America's richest families. This is Jim Hightower saying, did I mention that the gilded tax structure proposed by this self-described business genius would hang an additional $1.5 trillion debt around our children's necks? No surprise, for Trump's grandiose luxury projects were often built with other people's money, advancing himself before he slipped away, leaving others to grapple with the bankruptcy.
Did you know that the number one fear of Americans is public speaking? And you may share in that fear. And you may have done the research to see programs that are supposed to help you out, but they require you to go an entire weekend with a bunch of people that you're intimidated to get in front of and spend a lot of money. Well, guess what? You can do my online course called Speak Your Spirit. I designed it especially for shy people, and it only costs you $50. That's it. SpeakYourSpirit.com. Start sharing what you want to say. SpeakYourSpirit.com. 1, 2, 3, 4. Normal people, stupid things. Today's entry comes from across the pond in Britain, where a senior citizen is suffering from an ear condition that causes him to hear this continuously in his head. Name this song. No. That's not My Country, 'Tis of Thee. This is the song that we stole that melody from. You know, that's not original. And we're talking about a guy in Britain. So it's God Save the Queen. And here is the song with the lyrics. Now, the reason I played you that is to let you know what Ron Goldspink hears in his head continuously. He has heard a male choir, now that was a mixed choir, but he has heard a male choir sing that British national anthem hundreds of times a day for the past 4 months. This is his quote, "Sometimes it's really loud and deafening, but other times it is quiet." Now, Goldspink originally thought a neighbor was playing the song, but has since been diagnosed with musical ear syndrome, which is a treatable form of tinnitus, so he will be able to get the song out of his head. He says he thought the singers in his head were really good, he just don't want to hear them anymore. But bless his heart, he's 87 years old. So I say congratulations to the people around him, because you know that when someone who is old says something that sounds ridiculous, you just blow them off. You think they're being senile, you think they're making it up, you disregard them. And I guarantee in Ron Goldspink's life, there are somebody disregarded him saying, "I swear to God, I'm hearing God Save the Queen," over and over again. If it's not the neighbor, then who is it? And somebody said, "Oh, Ron, you're making that up." So congratulations to those youngsters who didn't take care of him in time. But at least he's going to get cured, and you made it into my can of crazy. So one more confession before I go. I did it again. I thought I was only going to watch a few minutes of a show, and I watched it for 2 hours, and it was a movie I've seen over and over again before, and it has to do with teenagers, because I love a good teenage movie or teenage television show. I can't believe that I sat down, turned on the TV, and Varsity Blues was on. Yes, Dawson in his football uniform trying to fight against Angelina Jolie's dad. He being a bad coach. And it was awesome. If you get to know me, then I'm the person that cannot recall proper names. I am the worst at names. It's awful. And especially when it comes to Hollywood. That's why I say Dawson and Angelina's dad. Like, I can't think of those actors' names. I'll think of them in 15 minutes when I'm gone, but I won't think of them right now when I need to. I used to work with some guys that loved the Melissa game, because they would, I would try to recall a movie or something that I went to see, and it would be a guessing game, because I would start talking like that. Well, you know, Dawson, and it was Angeline's dad that was in it, and they were playing football, and these guys just thought it was hilarious that it's where's what the hell is Melissa talking about? That's the game that we play. And so, but Varsity Blues, I remember the name of the movie, but I can't remember the name of, like, the actress. The actress that did the shaving cream scene is also the actress that was in that action movie with the woman that was in Fifth Element. See what I'm saying? I can't think of anybody's name. But I did. I sat down and I thought, I'm only going to watch this for a few minutes. And I keep telling myself that lie. I'm stuck on that lie. And I did. And I sat there for 2 hours from start to finish and watched Varsity Blues as if I don't know that they're going to, you know, are they going to win the championship? Is Dawson going to go to Brown University? Is the big guy going to score that last touchdown? Like, I don't know, as if I don't know what's going to happen. But I sure do love those movies. So you can catch us on social media. Melissa Carter, 1L2S's on Twitter. Melissa Carter ATL, Facebook, Instagram. ShePersistedShow.com is our website. Progressive Voices app, absolutely free to download. And if you're already on iTunes, that's the easiest thing to do is just search for She Persisted Show. There we are. Like us, follow us. We would love for you to subscribe. And I'm going to finish the day with a quote from Maya Angelou, one of my favorite all-time writers. A wise woman wishes to be no one's enemy. A wise woman refuses to be anyone's victim. All right, I hope you have a fantastic Thursday. Do something for yourself today. Have a private moment where you smile to yourself and you're proud of yourself for something, because that is the most important thing. And we will see you tomorrow morning on Friday for more She Persisted. Have a great one. Bye-bye.